Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. There is a series of words that have struck fear in the hearts of trades contractors for a number of years, and especially since the big home centers have come to town. The series of words is, do it yourself. And that series of words, in the past, clearly meant lost sales and lower profits. That is no longer the case. At least one company, Tax Incorporated of Charlotte, North Carolina, has not only found a way to compete in that market, but their slogan is America's HVAC Do-It-Yourself Headquarters. No, the do-it-yourself market is not all they do, but it is a very profitable part of what they offer. Many contractors who find niche markets don't want to share their secrets with anyone. This month's tape is a giant exception. Bob Dickinson is not only willing to share how he does it, he presents seminars all over the country teaching other trades companies how to do it as well. Bob started in the wholesale end of the industry in 1958. By 1974, he was a 50% owner in a wholesale company. A few years later, in 1981, he started his own wholesale business. But by 1991, he realized the potential profit of running a contracting business catering to the do-it-yourself market. Today, Bob not only runs a very profitable business, but he presents seminars on how to generate significant profits in the do-it-yourself market to contractors all over the country. As you listen to this tape, try to grasp the concepts of what Bob is presenting. If you understand what he says, and you are willing to invest the time and money it requires, your company may just become the new do-it-yourself headquarters in town. Now find a comfortable chair and get ready to listen and take notes as Bob presents this month's tape on how to make lots of money in the do-it-yourself market.
One of the fastest growing markets in America is the do-it-yourself market, the sale of products and sometimes services to the growing band of home handymen and women. Two of the giants in the do-it-yourself sales are Home Depot and Lowe's. These two home improvement store sales in 1998 topped $45 billion. It is estimated that total sales nationally to do-it-yourselfers topped $300 billion that same year. And yet, most small businesses overlook the potential available to them in this lucrative market. In fact, we have a tendency to frown on the do-it-yourselfer as one who takes business away from us. So let's make something very clear at the outset. Do-it-yourselfers have been around since the beginning of time. In fact, only since the Industrial Revolution in the early 19th century have people relied on others to provide them with most of their goods and services. As educational standards improved and mass production became the standard for producing goods, more and more of us became proficient in one field, and while we earned our living in that field, we depended on others to provide for our other needs. That being said, most of us still spend a part of our free time doing for ourselves tasks like mowing the lawn, planting shrubs, painting the house, and for some of us, even adding a room or building a garage. Why do we do this? Well, for a variety of reasons. To save money, to satisfy our pride of ownership, in some cases, to be sure the job is done right, and maybe, just maybe, because we enjoy doing things for ourselves. For many of us, the do-it-yourself bug bit us and just won't let go. We're just having fun. But no matter what, be sure of one thing. There have always been do-it-yourselfers, and there will always be do-it-yourselfers. Whether you serve them through your business or not, they will find the product they want, and someone will reap a profit from their needs. Additionally, if they buy from the wrong source because you weren't prepared to serve them, not only will you lose the sale and its profit, but your lost customer may end up with a poor bargain. Let me explain with a brief example. My business happens to be heating and air conditioning contracting. We sell, install, and service heating and cooling systems for residences and businesses. Now, suppose Joe homeowner decides to install his own heating and cooling system, furnace, air conditioner, ductwork, the whole nine yards, himself. But I won't sell to him because I don't sell to do-it-yourselfers. And he can't find another source in my industry. All of my peers feel as I do. Joe has no business doing this himself. But Joe is persistent. And he finally finds a source. The guy down the street, Joe doesn't really know him very well, has a cousin in an adjoining town whose brother-in-law works for a heating and air conditioning wholesaler. And he can get Joe everything he needs. Well, almost everything. So Joe rents a U-Haul and drives 30 miles to buy what he thinks he needs. Joe read a chapter in a Time Life book one time, so he's pretty sure he knows how to do it. He gets the stuff home, he goes to work, and then he realizes that he doesn't have a clue as to how to put this system in and make it work. So now, what does Joe do? Well, of course, he calls me or one of my competitors, and he asks for some help. At this point, I can do one of two things. I can agree to install Joe's system for him using materials that I may not be totally familiar with since I didn't furnish them. If I do this, I will apply my normal labor price to the job. I will apply my normal markup to the materials that I didn't but should have supplied. And I may add in an aggravation factor for, well, you figure that one out. Bottom line is, Joe didn't get a very good deal. I didn't have a very good job. Joe was probably never going to be happy with the price or the results. And, oh yes, how about the warranty on the mechanical equipment that Joe bought and I installed? On the other hand, I can do nothing, leaving poor Joe with a U-Haul full of stuff. Now let's replay this scenario. Joe hears that my company has a do-it-yourself program. That's right, a program. Guaranteed results, start to finish. Joe comes to our company with his list of material. We consult with him, make changes where advisable, not arbitrary changes, but changes which, based on our experience, will improve the end result without undue additional costs. We discuss the work that it might be advisable for us to do, work requiring skilled labor, such as refrigerant piping. We agree on a price. We get the material together, Joe writes a check, and he goes to work. When Joe needs some advice, he calls us or comes by. When Joe's system is ready to start up, he calls us and we check everything out. If it's okay, we throw the switch. Who wins in this scenario? Well, obviously Joe does, because he gets a working system at considerable cost savings since he did most of the work. We win because we saved a sale that was positively going do-it-yourself and would never be our sale for a total turnkey job. The supplier of the material wins because a professional, our company, was involved in the installation and startup of the equipment. In fact, there are no losers. Even the wholesaler who would have sold this material to Joe is a winner. He now makes a sale to us. So consider what we have determined so far. There will always be do-it-yourselfers. They will always find a source for the product they need. They represent a very profitable and growing market. With your expertise in your chosen field, you are their very best source. When they buy from you, they win. Your supplier wins. Most importantly, you win. Okay, so you agree. Maybe you should look into the do-it-yourself market. Incidentally, to keep from getting tongue-tied with the term do-it-yourself, let's agree for the balance of this tape to simply call it DIY. So maybe this is something you should look into. If you're still on the fence, let's look at a few more positives. If you are a typical contractor, your total job lasts from several hours to several weeks. If you're a good business person, your terms of payment are something like 25% on contract signing, 50% at a certain point in the completion cycle, and the balance on completion. And if you're lucky, the midpoint payment gets delayed no more than 10 days, and the final payment no more than a month. In the DIY market, your primary sale is for product, and products are typically paid for at the time of purchase and or delivery. Try buying product at Sears, Lowe's, or Home Depot without cash, check, or credit card. Do you think you could walk out the door without paying right now? Your DIY customer expects to pay at the time of delivery, yet that same customer in a turnkey contract relationship may easily expect to pay days or even weeks after completion of the work. Inventory is another important dollar savings consideration. In my contracting business, I find it necessary to keep a certain amount of inventory on hand, since it is too costly and time-consuming to send to the supplier every time we need some product. Yet in selling to the DIY market, inventory is not as critical. The handyman seldom needs to buy the very same day you consult with him or her. In fact, often a result of this all-important consultation is a change in plans, resulting in a change in product. The point is, almost every DIY sale we make is for product not in our inventory. We arrange for the date of delivery and or pickup by our customer. We purchase the product on that day and have the money for the sale in hand that very same day. If any of the product is special order, we get the money in advance, and the customer expects to do business this way. Quick example. My wife and I, do-it-yourselfers from way back, decided to put all new windows in our house. The low-E product in the sizes we needed was a special order at the Home Improvement Warehouse. We paid for these windows before they were ordered. The store, Home Depot in this case, was able to use our money for probably up to 60 days. Smart on their part and expected on my part. Think about it. You have 30-day terms with your supplier. Your DIY customer buys from you on June 1st and pays for the purchase. You place your order for special order merchandise with your supplier on June 1st, and it arrives on July 1st. Your billing from your supplier is dated July 1st, payable with discount on August 10th. You got the retail money on June 1st. You pay the wholesale money on August 10th. Not bad. One more thing. How much labor does it take to turn how many profit dollars in your current business? And what does this labor really cost you? I mean, we know the hourly cost and the FICA and workers' comp and company liability based on payroll, and how about paid vacations and holidays and missed days for whatever reason, and the occasional counseling sessions and doctors and dentist appointments, and the days the car broke down or the kids have school problems. Now, if we have employees, we all have these problems, and we all work them out. And we love our employees and their families, and if we don't, we should. But wouldn't it be great if just a part of our business could operate with a minimum of outside help? Think about it. The DIYer is your labor staff without being on your payroll. Sure he is. He is doing most of the work that you pay your employees to do. I can tell you for a fact that in my business, a typical system that will require 60 man hours of paid labor for a turnkey sale will require no more than 8 hours of our time for a DIY sale, and oftentimes as little as an hour or two. Remember this about a DIYer. In nearly every case, time is of little value. He or she is doing this work on their own time, time that might otherwise be spent watching TV or performing some other useless task. The job that you might be required to complete in a day may take the DIYer a month. So what? It's only time that otherwise has little, if any, value. Okay, you say. All this may be good for some businesses, but not mine. I don't do things that the homeowner can do himself. All of my work requires skilled labor. And while it may be true that not every business can profit from the DIY craze, I can't think of any home improvement business that doesn't use some unskilled labor. And if your business does use primarily people skilled in your trade, think of those things that your company could do or sell that might be related to your primary business but could be done or installed or just bought from you by your customer. If this means adding some new product lines, then by all means, do so. Just be sure that your product is competitively priced in your market, and most importantly, be sure that you and your staff are far more knowledgeable about your new product line than any of your competition. From time to time, I'm going to throw a Dickinson rule in on you. Here's the first. Dickinson rule number one. Most people don't buy on price alone. They will pay for features and the confidence that they have been given reliable information. Now that you've decided to profit from the DIY market, prepare your marketing plan. To announce that you are now prepared to sell the DIY customer without proper planning is a sure formula for failure. We have developed a very simple but proven five-step system to put your DIY marketing plan into high gear. Here's how it works. Step number one, assign responsibility. Not only is this the first step, it may well be the most important one. Have one person, your wife or husband, a grown son or daughter that is or wants to be in the business, a trusted and reliable employee who will welcome the challenge of new opportunities. Have one person totally responsible for the implementation and growth of this segment of your business. Treat this as a separate profit center, almost as a separate business. Let this be the primary responsibility of the person selected to oversee it. Ultimately, it should grow enough to be their only responsibility. However you go at it, we cannot emphasize enough the importance of total commitment to the success of this program. If you enter the DIY market in any other way, if you treat it as a second-rate profit center, or, and this one is a killer trap that is easy to fall into and hard to dig out of, if you decide to do this when things slow down or when things aren't so hectic, my friends, it simply won't work. You must dedicate your thoughts, your efforts, and most especially your total support to this idea that DIY is profitable and is here to stay. And you must convince yourself and your staff that this is important and that it will work, or most assuredly, it won't. And by the way, while we're mentioning profits, I just love that word, don't you? While we're mentioning profits, let me give you some idea of the margins available in the DIY market. By comparison, in my industry, heating and air conditioning, and in my region of the country, typical profits for an installed HVAC residential system might run in the 30% range. This would be after the labor and overhead have been satisfied and before the taxes have been paid. I believe most HVAC contractors would consider that satisfactory. Please believe me when I tell you that our DIY sales double that, more than 60% profit, for a whole lot less work, exposure, and financial risk. Step number two, develop your product line. You might say, I already have my product line. It's what I've always sold. And that's fine if it's true. Nevertheless, consider the brands you presently sell if you sell a commodity like plumbing or heating and air conditioning. If you have several lines, as is true in some cases, you sell whatever the customer wants. You may want to consider a specific brand to market exclusively to the DIY user. Furthermore, you might want to think about specialty products to add to your line of products that might especially appeal to the DIY customer. 7-day digital setback thermostats come to mind, or high-efficiency air filters that aren't locally available through the home improvement centers. How about water purifiers? Or why not, if you're in the plumbing business, for example, why not design a simple hot water circulating loop that the customer can install himself to keep hot water at the tap all of the time? You sell the complete system, pump, pipe, and all, along with a design and a 1-2-3-step installation sheet written and illustrated so the unskilled handyman can follow it. Incidentally, on your design and installation sheet, print at the bottom right-hand side of the word copyright, the year, and the name of your company or your own name. This will discourage others from copying your hard work and innovation. Step number 3. Prepare the pricing structure. Once you have decided on the complete product line, you must develop and print a complete price sheet to accompany it. How many times have you gone into an independently owned store, let's say an appliance store, and asked for the price on a product, and the salesperson goes to a master manufacturer's catalog, pulls out the handheld calculator, and in 5 minutes or so has the price scribbled on the back of a business card? Have your price sheet prepared and printed in advance for every product you promote. This enables you to step forward in a confident mode that your pricing is good and is non-negotiable. Here's another rule. Dickinson rule number 2. A price, handwritten on a piece of paper, is a very negotiable price. When you prepare your prices, don't forget taxes, freight, and other hidden charges that can jump up and bite you. And by all means, price your product high enough. By way of example, we have 2 categories of price in our business, other than any extra services or labor we may perform for the DIY user. Our equipment, which consists of motor-bearing equipment, air conditioners, furnaces, and so forth, and refrigerant-containing equipment, evaporator coils, refrigerant-bearing copper lines, is marked up 45%. All other product, ductwork, piping, air diffusers, tape, screws, everything, is doubled in price. In 9 years, we have never had a DIY customer question our pricing. And we are in a market with more than 15 major home improvement centers and over 200 licensed heating and air conditioning contractors. Prepare dual pricing for your DIY customer. Tell him what his price will be to buy the product and necessary services from you. Then give him a realistic price if you were to furnish the entire job, labor, materials, and all. Show him his savings in dollars and cents. Even guarantee his savings this way. If he buys from you to do the work himself, and if for some reason, any reason, he is unable to complete or even start the project, guarantee to complete his project at a price not to exceed your original quoted turnkey price. We call it the no-nonsense price protection guarantee. It's our customer security blanket. By the way, another advantage to offering both DIY and turnkey pricing. There have been several occasions when the customer came to us because we offered the DIY program and then decided to buy instead a turnkey system from us without ever getting another estimate. When you offer to work with a customer in a way that suits him best, you really end up wearing the white hat. A final thought about price sheets. Be sure that all of your employees are familiar with this price sheet and are able to quote product from it. Nothing is more embarrassing than having the same potential customer get 2 different prices from 2 different employees. Step number 4. Prepare and print the company brochure. Now hold on there. I didn't say it had to be 4-color, multi-page, and expensive. Not at all. That would be nice, but it's not necessary. But put plenty of thought into who you are and what you do. You want to convey to potential customers a professionalism that accurately reflects you, your company, your abilities as they relate to your customers' needs. Our first, and perhaps our best, brochure was printed on one side of 1 8.5 by 11 inch colored paper. It was printed on our own word processor and run off in quantity on our copy machine. But it was neat, the spelling was checked, and it simply spelled out the message we wanted to convey. It even had a motto, copyright, by the way, that I am going to pass on to you on this tape. I give you this to use or modify as you see fit. The motto is simply this: you do the work, we do the work, we work together. Whatever works for you works for us. Incidentally, if anyone ever questions your use of this motto, simply refer them to this tape. While you're in the creative printing mood, print up some other items that you can use as handouts to let your potential customer know that you are good folks to do business with. One we used was our no-nonsense price protection guarantee that we mentioned earlier. This spelled out for the customer how they couldn't lose when buying product from us, and it was a guarantee we could proudly stand behind and that we felt no one in our market could duplicate. We must have been right, because in 9 years, no one has. Step number 5. Locate and identify affordable advertising media. Affordable is the key word here. I once asked a very busy and successful service contractor how he managed to stay so busy. "Where do you get your leads?" I asked him. He replied that he passed out about 5,000 business cards a year. "Everywhere I go, I leave a business card," he said. "If I go back to the same restaurant for coffee every day, I leave a new business card every day. I'm sure most of them get thrown away, but I'm also sure that some of them don't." Business cards, low cost, informative, contain all the basic information. My card has printed across the bottom in script, "America's Do-It-Yourself Headquarters." What a message. Need I say more? Every market has the free weekly shopper newspapers, all ads, mostly classifieds, with plenty of space for display ads. These tend to be low cost, and they get read by a lot of people. Some of these newspapers are themselves owned by small, undercapitalized entrepreneurs who may be willing to trade free advertising for your product. I traded a worn-out work van with one for 13 weeks of a 2-column by 3-inch display ad. The ad brought me over $20,000 in new business. The van was worth $500. Don't forget the power of truck signs. Your rolling stock is seen everywhere in your market, every day. We have some vans and cars we don't want to put permanent signs on, so we use well-designed magnetic signs. They work. Okay, so you've taken the 5 steps, and now you're ready to serve your new DIY customers. Except, you don't have any DIY customers. Well, don't despair. Remember, the first 4 steps were to prepare you for the new business. Only the 5th step addressed promoting the new business. So while we're waiting for the onslaught of customers, let's do some more promoting. Check for the next open date for a home show in your area and try to get a booth. Be sure the show is a proven one, one that has been there before and has gotten good reviews. If possible, talk with others who have had a booth at this show to see how they did. If you do sign on for a booth, get plenty of literature ready and some signs and banners to dress up the booth. Inexpensive giveaways are always helpful, and maybe one door prize to be given away on the last day. Home shows are nothing new, but if your booth is properly presented, a do-it-yourself booth will stand out and attract a sizable crowd. Remember, you are probably doing something in your market that, if done at all, is only being done by the giant chain outlets. While we're there, let's talk a little bit about the giant chains in the home improvement market. We mentioned earlier that Home Depot and Lowe's enjoy a tremendous market share in the DIY market. They have superstores of roughly 140,000 square feet. They are open 7 days a week, roughly 15 hours a day. We have already established that their volume is tremendous. My business, and I assume yours, will never be a threat to these giants, nor do we aspire to be. Our goal must be to find that niche in which we excel, and to be the very best supplier in that niche market that we know how to be. Because of sheer size, the large home improvement center may find it difficult, or even impossible, to render the personal service and establish the close relationship with their customers that we can. If we sell only 2 DIY customers a week, we will net before taxes between $50,000 and $75,000 a year. If we sell only 2 DIY customers a week, we will be able to render personal service to each of them that you wouldn't believe. If the large home improvement center would sell only 2 DIY customers a week from the store aisle that specializes in our product, that part of the store would close. Thus, as hard as they try, they can never render the specialized personal service that you can. Remember Dickinson rule number one. Most people don't buy on price alone. They will pay for features and the confidence that they have been given reliable information. Something else to remember about the DIY customer. As independent as he or she may appear, that customer wants, even needs, the assurance that if something goes wrong, someone will be there to bail them out. Chances are nothing will go wrong, but chances are even greater that the larger the project, the probability that something will go wrong increases. And when that happens, you will be there to help. Logistically, the large outlet may be unable to render this type of service. Well, the customers still haven't come in? Remember the movie with Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams? If you build it, they will come. Well, even Costner had to push a little to get them to come. So keep trying. Go to your suppliers. Tell them about your DIY plans. You know, most suppliers, wholesalers, don't want to sell to the general public. They will welcome a source to sell their product to that will in turn take away from them the burden of selling to the individual. We get about 50 leads a year, and these are good leads from people ready to buy from suppliers in our area. Think up some promotion ideas of your own that you know will work in your market. Above all, don't get discouraged if the first five ideas don't work. Remember, this is a new concept you're trying. Maybe idea number six will be right on target. Ready for another rule? Dickinson rule number three. The first one to climb a mountain has the hardest climb and the best view when he gets there. You finally get your first DIY lead. How do you talk to them? You don't. They have come to talk to you about a project that they have been giving thought to for weeks or even months. So far, you've been tuned in for about 22 seconds. So let them talk. They will show you their plans and their sketches, or maybe they'll just explain their concept of what they have planned. But they will be excited about this project because of the thought and planning they have put into it. And they want you to share in their excitement and yes, to share in their joy. So let them talk. Answer their questions as expertly and briefly as possible. Above all, be interested. When it's your turn to talk, they'll let you know, either verbally or with some kind of body language. Don't let this scare you. After the first customer or two, you'll catch on. When it is your turn to talk, keep it simple, but be careful not to talk down to the customer. We occasionally sell an air conditioning unit made in Japan. The Japanese sell these units in their own country through department stores, directly to the end user. Thus, the instruction sheet is written with the end user in mind. Now, in our industry, the twin refrigerant lines are called the suction line for the large diameter one, and the liquid line for the small diameter. An American instruction sheet would refer to the suction line or the liquid line. However, the one from Japan refers simply to the large line and the small line. We learned a lot from our Japanese friends. When we talk to our DIY customers, we talk about the large line and the small line. Speaking of instruction sheets, use them. They are a great selling tool to the DIY user since he admittedly needs all the help he can get. Your supplier may have some that will work, but don't count on it. Usually, the supplier will have instruction sheets or manuals which have been prepared by the manufacturers they represent, and they in turn have prepared them for the skilled craftsman. The sheets you prepare must be understandable to the novice, the untrained and unskilled homeowner. We prepare single-sheet instruction sheets with line-sketched illustrations where needed. We tell the homeowner only what he needs to know in order to perform the task referred to. We use an instruction sheet telling the homeowner how to install flexible fiberglass ductwork. another on installing register termination boots, and several others covering various tasks. Always short, always simple, and always written in layman's language. Incidentally, we always include a brief paragraph on safety, a kind of a disclaimer on our part in case the homeowner gets careless. If you have a large home center in your area, spend half an hour or so walking through the store with one goal: collect all of the free DIY instruction sheets you can find. Usually they will be nailed to the shelf in a tear-off pad form. Sometimes they are in a plastic brochure holder. My wife and I did that recently, and in 15 minutes we picked up 23 instruction sheets on everything from building a deck to installing kitchen cabinets, always describing the use of the manufacturer's product, of course. Another thing many of the home centers do well is hands-on training. We went to a class the other night learning how to install replacement windows and doors. A team of two fellows presented the very informal class to about eight of us do-it-yourselfers. It was light, fun, and informative. Not only did we learn, but we left feeling good about buying our windows from this particular home center, because they took enough of an interest in us and in our project to spend their time and money training us. You can and should do the same thing. It can be a free community class. Your local community college or school system will probably be glad to help, even furnish the facility. Or it can be a one-on-one session with a single customer. The point is, the customer must be made to feel that you care enough about him to help him do the job right. And remember to keep your terminology simple and understandable, but not so obviously elementary that your customer may be insulted. You may not be prepared to give your DIY customer a price at the first meeting. This really depends on what your product is and what your customer wants to buy. For example, if you are a landscaper and your customer wants to plant 6 Japanese maple trees of a certain size or age, you can probably price this on the spot. But if he has an idea for a complete landscape project for half an acre and has come to you for help and ideas, this will take some time and thought on your part. You may want to visit the property with him and walk through it. You will want to make suggestions for various plantings, walks, and so forth that he thus far has not mentioned. You may need a week or two to offer him the best ideas, plans, and prices. The important thing here is to communicate with your customer, let him know of some of the things you have in mind, and about how long it will take you to come up with a workable plan. Make arrangements to meet him, say, within a week, but always at a time and place convenient to him. Once again, here enters a strong reason your DIY customer may prefer to buy from you rather than your competitor, and you really only have two types of competition. Competitor number one is not tuned in, as you are, to dealing with a DIY customer. Competitor number one wants either to sell the customer the Japanese maples and go on to the next sale, or he wants to do a complete turnkey landscape job. Competitor number two is the giant chain retailer, who may have good pricing, but can you imagine number two taking the time to design a plan, visit the property, drink a cup of coffee with Mr. Homeowner, share in the excitement of the homeowner's dreams, and come up with a plan in a week or two that demonstrates thought, caring, and expertise? Several years ago, I played the part of a homeowner wanting to buy a new furnace and air conditioner from a large home center. Not too many of them carry these products, but this one happened to. After searching for someone to answer some of my questions, I was given technical information that I knew to be incorrect, based on my experience. I was then given the 800 number of their supplier, in Columbus, Ohio, I believe. After making the phone call from the store phone and getting some information that was a little more accurate, I asked the supplier where I could buy some of the sheet metal products and parts that were not carried in the store. I couldn't believe the answer I received. "Why don't you look in the Yellow Pages? Maybe you can find a local sheet metal contractor who will furnish them." Well, if I went to that trouble, why wouldn't I just buy everything from the sheet metal guy? Customers want service. They want realistic pricing and projections. They want accurate information. They want to be treated fairly and with dignity. They want these things whether they are at the Mercedes dealership or Neiman Marcus or at the large home center or at your place of business. Whether they are paying for a turnkey finished product or the parts and pieces of a DIY project to be completed 2 years from now. Now that we agree that consulting is an important part of the DIY selling experience, how do we charge for this? Well, the answer to that question is going to vary depending on circumstances and custom. For example, if you normally give free estimates for your work, it would seem to follow that a survey or estimate for a DIY job would also be free. Some companies have a nominal charge for estimates or surveys, and the charge is forgiven if they get the order. The other day, the local Chrysler dealer checked out a vintage car I had just bought and told me up front the cost for this checkout service. They also told me that charge would be deducted from the work that I authorized. This was a fair deal all the way around. We make this agreement with all of our DIY customers. The estimate or survey, no charge. Phone consultation, no charge, unlimited. Site visits, first visit, no charge. All subsequent visits are standard hourly rate. The other labor costs we bill for are for the work we do that either we or the customer agree are beyond the scope of the customer's ability. For example, brazing copper refrigerant lines, control wiring, and installing gas piping are items we insist on doing, and we charge a fair but somewhat less than market price to do this work for the DIY customer. For other work we might do, we have a prepared price sheet, or menu, if you will. This menu covers every conceivable aspect of the installation, and each item is pre-priced. For example, cutting register holes in hardwood floors, $18 each. Installing return air grills and ceilings, $35 each, and so forth. This eliminates any question during the progress of the job as to who is responsible for what and what the cost will be. Another important consideration is resolving conflict, and from time to time, conflict there will be. In a turnkey situation, the lines of responsibility are fairly clearly drawn, especially if a contract has been issued. The contractor has the responsibility to furnish and complete the work, and the customer has the responsibility to pay on completion. DIY work, where both product and limited service are included, can be somewhat less clear-cut. Naturally, the need for written documents describing the duties of both owner and seller goes without saying. Even then, some items may have been inadvertently omitted. It is my opinion that in almost all of these cases, if there is any doubt at all as to the responsibility, the customer is always right. You may win the battle over a $50 item, but if you do, you will most assuredly lose the war over the $1,000 project. Remember this, you are working with pretty respectable profit margins in the DIY market. It's more important to give up a little of this margin to keep the goodwill and especially the referral potential of that customer. Well, friends, that's about it. You've got the five-step program. The motto, you do the work, we do the work. The no-nonsense price protection guarantee. Our goal in presenting this tape is to encourage you to take the next step toward marketing in the fastest-growing segment of the home improvement market. If you ever question the validity of moving in this direction, remember the numbers. Lowe's and Home Depot, $45 billion in sales last year. The total DIY market, $300 billion. Drive by your local home improvement center next Saturday morning, or even Tuesday afternoon. My guess is that you won't be able to count all the cars, vans, and pickup trucks in their parking lot. And my guess is, too, and this is an educated guess, that the Home Improvement Center, no matter whose name is over the door, won't be able to hold a candle to your ability to render customer service and satisfaction. Good luck and good selling in your do-it-yourself market.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Grandy & Associates on the World Wide Web. Our website provides a detailed schedule of coming full-day seminars. Our address is www.grandyassociates.com, and it is also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandyassociates.com. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.